I've had a lot of 3PL issues in my career. And
really?
Yeah, I've never had a lot of 3PL issues. And I'm like, you know, like 3PL issues are a call to war. When someone talks about a 3PL, and particularly the one I'm thinking about now, and they're like, hey, what do you think of them? I'm like, if you are raising an army to fight that 3PL, count me in.
Yeah.
And I don't need a gun. Give me a stick. I will sharpen it and I will go stab people myself over there because I am fucking irate.
This is Limited Supply, the place for refreshingly real takes on what D2C is really like.
We're your hosts, Nick and Moyes. Let's start talking about money.
Hey, Moyes, a couple weeks ago, I saw this company, ProMix, launched a protein-packed Rice Krispie treat. I don't know if you've heard of them, but the coolest part was after I purchased, I immediately got an email from Postscript Cash Back, and it gave me $15 of cash that I could redeem on my next purchase, which I used as soon as my first box of bars ran out. Have you seen this before?
Yeah, it's Postscript Cash Back. It's a new product for them. It's amazing. Postscript is really known for SMS, but this cashback product actually increases email and SMS signups by 31%. It increases contribution margin by 5%. It's going to be huge for Postscript.
That's amazing. If you want to see a demo and see how the product works, visit postscript.io/limited. That's postscript.io/limited.
Nick, here we go. We're on for the last episode of season 7. This season has lasted forever.
It's taken so long.
I
think what we did is we batched the first few episodes together. And I think that's why, because we started that before the season actually started. Whenever we do that, the season feels so long.
This is longer than it took me to run native, actually. Like, that's how long the season has been.
Yeah.
But okay, there are a lot of things to talk about. And I want to talk about them in the next episode. I want to talk a lot about the death of aggregators. Like,
yes.
We talked a little bit about Thrasio and how it didn't go right for the guys who started Thrasio. I looked into their bankruptcy documents. It was a little interesting.
Oh, like, amazing.
They were in August 2023, they were trying to raise money, and they had two people come to the table, but neither of them was ultimately ready to sign a deal. The two guys at the table were like, look, we'll invest equity in this business, but your debt holders have to take a significant haircut in terms of how much they've loaned you. Like, you know, the loan was $400 million. Now they have to write it off to $100 million. Something like that. Those weren't the exact amounts.
What type of people are coming to the table and offering money to Thrasio for that?
Well, I think a lot of people would, because you're sort of like, oh, look, I'm going to come in. I'm going to give you, I'll give you $500 million. Your debt that was $500 is now worth $100. All the other investors that own 80% of the business, now they own 10% of the business or 20% of the business. Mm-hmm. So you can come in and say, look, it's basically like a bankruptcy, almost like a bankruptcy. Your debt holders take a significant haircut. Your existing equity holders take a significant haircut. I come in with new equity and take majority control. But the debt holders were unwilling to do that in their instance. And they ultimately had a $25 million debt due in September 2023. They got a forbearance agreement. They went bankrupt. Anyway, I want to talk about Thrasio, Wynn Brands. I don't know if you saw this article where Wynn Brands did their third round of layoffs recently. They now have 45 employees left.
Wow.
I didn't know that they were founded as an extension of BVXL. Did you know that?
I knew that there was some crossover, but I didn't know that they were that closely related.
Okay, gotcha. And then Razor ended up buying Perch. Do you know Perch?
I've heard of Perch, yeah.
Anyway, Razor ended up buying Perch. And so the next episode, I really want to talk about the death of these aggregators and who's still succeeding, because I think there are still some guys doing well.
Totally.
But like, what went wrong with the aggregators and like things that people can do to avoid or things that people can avoid in order to build better businesses. Because I think one of the things that they did was build a poor business on business fundamentals. And I think a lot of people can learn from that.
Yep.
But anyway, that's for next episode, season 8, episode 1, where hopefully we get a 6 to 12 year hiatus. This episode here, we're doing a Q&A that came from our Slack group. Is that right?
Correct. So we have our Slack channel, limitedsupplypod.com, to join. And we asked everybody, what do you want to hear for Q&A? I think last season we did this too to finish out the season. So
yeah,
feels right to
do it
again.
I really like these episodes.
Yeah, I love it too. It's just fun discussion and, you know, no pressure on us to prepare anything.
Yeah,
either.
That's right. And it's like such actionable feedback.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
People
it's
are
all
actually
tactical.
Like, there's at least one guy in the world who's wondering what the answer to this is.
Exactly.
So let me start. I'm going to start because the first question is teed up specifically for you, or it should be at least. And it's by some guy named Prudence, which is a great name. What's the best landing page structure you see working right now?
I mean, it's kind of tough to say the exact like section for section structure.
Yeah.
you really want to just answer four or five questions over and over again. What's the product? Why does it exist? How's it going to benefit me? If I order today, when does it get here? And how does it compare to the competition? And basically all the other sections that you have, whether it's the hero section, the brag bar, the reviews, the comparison chart, the shop section, all these sections in that order, if you just keep answering those five questions, you've pretty much got a landing page that'll work. I prefer to have longer landing pages over short ones, because I feel like if somebody's going to find the answer, they'll click and they'll finish their journey. But if they haven't found the answer, you can keep going. But, you know, if I were to think of if we were selling Hint Water, I would say, you know, you put a hero there, add some social proof, have a good angle in the hero from a messaging standpoint. Then you have some social proof below that, like reviews or testimonials, press logos. You can get into what makes the product different, or you can sort of tee up the problem. I like to call this the why section. So, you know, why does this product exist? Why did the brand get created? What problem does it solve? That way, then when you get to the actual shop section, you have the problem in mind.
What are some of the angles that you used at Hint?
Tons. I mean, there, you know, like the, you know, one way to sell a product is like, hey, this is flavored water and it tastes really good and there's zero sugar, zero sweetener, which is how most people advertise. But the way that we would go about it is, you know, are you a mom that wants to give your kid something better than juice? You know, less sugar. That's an example of a good angle. Or our biggest angle was always against diet soda. So like actually in general, flavored beverages or sparkling water, their biggest competitor is always diet soda. It's not really other sparkling waters.
Really?
Yeah. At least that's how I always thought of it.
And it's not water either. It's like LaCroix, you just decide whether you're going to drink Diet Coke or LaCroix.
Yeah.
Not water. That's fair, because you go to the refrigerator. You're not going to the refrigerator for liquid
plain water. Yeah.
You know.
The biggest thing of the landing page that most people don't do is the angle.
Yeah.
If you want the full section for section, I think nick.co/cookbook, you get the whole landing page cookbook.
Oh, that's good. Cookbook is good. What is the one where like, okay, so yes, obviously image and add to cart are the most clear. I feel like I've seen a lot of landing pages without that comparison chart. Like last week we had on, you know, Alex from Postscript.
Right.
And one of the things I talked to him about is I was like, your Postscript landing page, your Postscript homepage doesn't show me how you differentiate yourselves between Klaviyo and Attentive and all the other guys doing SMS.
Yeah.
That is something that's very common on Amazon pages. Like on Amazon, if you scroll down to the bottom, like you'll often see a comparison chart. I guess let me ask you, is that necessary? And then I would ask, what's the one thing where sometimes they don't have it and you don't catch it? Like, I feel like social proof, you'd always catch. You'd be like, wow, there's no reviews. There's nobody saying this is good.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something I always catch. What's something you don't always catch, but you think is part of good landing page design?
I think there's a few different ways to do the comparison chart. So if you are, let's take Postscript for an example.
Yeah.
You know, Postscript could compare themselves to other platforms, you know, showing the purpose of SMS. So SMS versus the benefits of just doing email or direct mail or, you know, partner marketing, whatever it is. They could also compare themselves to direct competitors. So they could say Attentive, Klaviyo, Sendlane. And those would be two completely different pieces of comparison charts. The third would be, which I think is more applicable to a CPG product. Let's say you're selling, you know, protein powder.
Yeah.
You might compare something like a high-end protein powder, a plant-based protein powder, and like a, you know, beef-made protein powder. So you could do it in a way that's not, you're not calling out competitors, but you're still giving the customer a good understanding. Really, the point is that one of the pieces in the comparison chart is something that the customer knows well. And so it acts as a point of reference to then show how is your product better or worse in certain ways.
Okay.
Your second question of what's something that's not always in there, but when it's in there, it's really good. When it's not in there, it doesn't necessarily hurt it.
Yeah.
Is like a four reasons why or a five reasons why about 60% of the way through a landing page.
Okay.
You know, if somebody's gotten to 60%, they're still looking for answers.
Yeah.
And if you can reverse engineer what people talk about in their reviews into a five reasons why listicle, starting with the most, you know, like Caraway's most talked about features is like nonstick or easy to clean or their storage. And so if you make that listicle and the first one is nonstick, the second one's easy to clean, the third one is easy to store, you know, you're basically just reverse engineering what the customers have already told you they value out of the product the most.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. So that's I think really that's one that people could add.
Do you use Caraway pots and pans?
Yeah.
Really cook. Okay.
Yeah. I don't really cook that much.
But,
yeah.
What about like there's a couple apps sometimes that I see that I find really interesting. One is like that Tolstoy app where you look at the bottom right and it's like a video of the founder saying, "Hey, how are you?
welcome to our brand and come check us out. I think I saw this recently on a brand called Wonder Mondays, which does, I think I saw it on there, which does like a high protein, low carb cheesecake. And I thought that was really interesting that like, here's the CEO talking about it at the bottom right. You know, sometimes you see those things that say, Nick just bought from 2 minutes ago from New York, New York. John just bought from 5 minutes ago from Omaha, Nebraska. And like, you know, there used to be one where I'm not sure if this still exists, where you could do like stories, like, you know, you're basically your mobile page would have story reviews at the very top that people format people were really used to through Instagram. Have you tried any of those? Are those good? Are those like, how do you think about using that type of software?
I'm a huge fan of Tolstoy. I haven't personally implemented it, but everybody who I know has put it on has said that it has definitely helped increase conversion.
Okay.
And I think it works really well for brands that are not super well known and also have a good publicly facing founder.
Yeah.
I think that helps a lot. There is an app we've used in the past called Livecom, LYVECOM, which does what you're sort of talking about, which is like, how do you demonstrate either UGC or story style content?
Yeah.
This has helped on a few landing pages we've made for Glamnetic, and there was one other brand specifically, but it looks beautiful. It arranges quickly. It loads quickly. You get some better analytics specific to the video that you don't normally get if you just use YouTube Shorts or Vimeo. But if you're not going to use Livecom, I'd recommend using YouTube Shorts because Vimeo gets expensive quick.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. But if you put it in YouTube Shorts and you just embed the shorts,
it's free.
Yeah, it's free. Wow.
God. But like when you're doing YouTube Shorts like that, is there any chance an ad runs at the beginning or no?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good question though. I'm not 100,000% confident in that, but I'm pretty sure.
It'd be crazy if
that would be crazy.
Like you're just got a native website. You're like, I want to watch this influencer use a product. And the first thing you get is an ad for a secret deodorant.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be absolutely bananas. Okay, let me move on to question. I think that was a great answer. I'm always like impressed and in awe of all these new brands or all these like new software services that help improve conversion.
Yeah.
I'm often a little skeptical as well.
Same.
And like, you know, it's almost always a trade-off. Like, you can add Tolstoy, but then you got to get rid of your live chat because you can't have a live chat and Tolstoy.
Yeah.
Or you got to get rid of your, like, you know, your Klaviyo or PostScript or Attentive. Like, you know, the thing that when you close the pop-up and it sort of goes away into that little bubble.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have, I've gone on some of these landing pages and I'm like, there's seven bubbles here.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm being attacked by bubbles.
I even get annoyed when you just see like the get 10% off button.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's and you click it and it just tricks you into the email pop-up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a terrible experience.
That's what they all do. But I'm saying like, if you have that, live chat and Tolstoy and FOMO, you're just like, what's going on? Like, you know, you got to make sure that your landing page still looks clean as well.
Yeah.
And like represents the brand. I think there is that trade-off. So like when you use Tolstoy, it might be all great when it comes to ROI, but you're probably sacrificing ROI because you're giving up something else there.
Yeah, it's also worth calling out like the reason that is really the reason we never really talk much about software companies on this podcast, nor do we promote anything we don't use because there are so many things out there that have all these outrageous claims.
Yeah, I think we've talked about a few and gotten a little, it's gotten a little.
We get some heat. We gotten a couple cease and desist.
Yeah, what do you think about like? Let's move on to question two. All right. Actually, okay, it's the last episode of the season. I feel like I don't need to like throw bombs out today. It's also Ramadan, so I'm like, okay, I'm fasting, no bombs today. Where do either of you guys spend your time on a daily basis? Would love to learn more about what it's like to be an agency owner, a CEO, operating multiple businesses, or an investor. Where do you spend your time, actually?
I feel like you should go first. I'm so curious about this, too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a little curious as well. The honest answer is that there's virtually no day that's the same as another day, which is weird, but also they're all packed is the worst part about it. Like I will carve out like 2 hours in the middle of the day to go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do that religiously. I'm like, okay, it's 11 a.m. or, noon. I'm going to go to the gym. And that's I hold those 2 hours on a daily basis because I really enjoy them. But, you know, today I like was bidding on a house auction and it didn't work out. But I like diligenced other house auctions that I'm looking at. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go, you know, there's auctions coming up over the course of the next week. I'll calendar them. I'll do a little bit of diligence. And then I'll be, you know, if I've got a guy on the ground, I'll be like, hey, you go check this house out, send me photos and you get back to me about what it looks like.
So, you know, that's a little bit of my day. I'll look at an e-commerce brand. Earlier this week, I made an offer for an e-commerce brand. And, you know, I have no idea if it'll be, like, I think it was a really compelling offer. I offered a multiple that exceeds most multiples today. And, you know, I was also like, look, we can close this deal whenever, like, you know, you can close in a week if you want to close in a week, or 30 days if you want to close in 30 days. I'm not, like, I'm not trying to retrade, you know, if your numbers are right, I'm not trying to retrade. I don't care about, you know, I want to do deals. So I did that earlier this week. I had a couple, like, you know, people were at Expo West. So I wanted to introduce a few people that I knew at Expo West to other people that I thought would be interesting. And so I did that as well. And then I had, you know, random phone calls with companies that I'm thinking about investing in or an advisor in, or, like, you know, I had dinner with a guy who's in e-commerce. You know, it'll be random stuff.
Yeah.
Or somebody will be in town to talk about e-commerce, or I'll have a board, like, you know, I think this last week for one entire day, I had a board meeting. And, like, you know, the night before you get the board deck, so you're probably up pretty late reviewing the board deck before you get into the board meeting. Sometimes I'll do calls for a company that I'm invested in, and they're like, hey, we're trying to hire this guy. Can you call him up and tell him to take this job?
Yeah.
I've done that for Postscript in the past because I'm an investor in Postscript. So they're all pretty random days. You know, I'm also an investor advisor in a bunch of businesses or own a business. And so we'll do a board call, or, like, you know, we'll go through the monthly performance of that business.
Yeah.
And we'll see, you know, what does EBITDA look like? Where are things trending? Can I be helpful in any way? Are we trying to launch into Target? Are we trying to launch into on a platform where I have a relationship with the CEO? Can I help in that way? So that I'll also get involved in that. And, like, that happens quite frequently.
Yeah.
And so even when I travel, I'm, like, constantly making sure that I'm, like, not for personal gain, but like, you know, it's just so I can, not to leverage a relationship, but so I can be helpful for other people. I'll be talking to people a bunch.
Yeah. I feel like both you and I do that a lot, where we connect other people.
Definitely. With
obviously no expectation in return.
Yeah.
But just being attached to, you know, like, introducing two people and they do something great, just being attached to that is all the satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, the nice part is when I don't know someone in e-commerce, I know that I can text you, or, like,
yeah.
You know, and I hope that, like, likewise, where I'm like, okay, this, you know, I'm like, you can make the introduction right away.
Totally.
And yeah, like, I've never taken an affiliate fee on an introduction.
Yeah.
There's a lot of SaaS companies I'm an investor in, and they're like, you know, I think Triple Whale once sent me $70 because they said, you got this customer for us. And I was like, you know, first it's $70. And second, yeah. I was like, I don't like how this feels.
Yeah.
And so I emailed the guy and I was like, look, I got $70. I'll donate it to charity or give it to you. You tell me what you want to do.
Yeah.
That's happened with one other SaaS platform. I forgot what it was. No one has ever been like, send me the money. Everyone has always been like, just donate to charity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my days are pretty random as well. You know, if I'm traveling, the schedule tends to be different. It's usually focused around trying to set up meetings or, you know, lunches, dinners, yeah, coffee sure. meetings,
what
workout
do you do
meetings.
When you're not traveling? How does this work? Like, how does your agency work? Are you doing sales calls? Are you doing like...
Yeah. So like this week, for example, I was not traveling. You know, I'd say half my week is probably meetings, calls with either existing clients, internal meetings, you know, sitting in with our team and figuring out what we're doing for certain clients or how we're going to do something cool.
How do you like manage those clients? Because like, I don't know how many clients you guys have, but you know, traditionally an agent, like if I'm working with an agency, I don't want my account rep to have more than four clients. You're not an account rep by any stretch of the imagination, but like, how involved are you on any given brand?
I'd say I'm pretty involved in the strategy piece and seeing everything before it goes out. So I see all the final designs, all the final creative, and all the final media plans. I'm not in every single client meeting day to day, because then I wouldn't have any time.
Yeah.
But I sit with the team every week. We go through, okay, from a strategy standpoint, you know, this client, they're coming up 3% short on their monthly goal. What are we doing in order to fix that? You know, are we going to run a flash sale? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? You know, we've had with Facebook these last couple of weeks, it's been a total shit show. And so a lot of my energy has been focused around how do we find the right people at Facebook that can actually get us answers and get these problems fixed.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like, you know, my COO, now we have a COO, she pretty much dictates like where I spend my time. So every Monday she'll tell me, here's what you need to do this week. And it's in Notion. And then my only job is to focus on that. It might be like three things or four things that need to get done. And then my entire focus is that.
How do you manage the finances at your firm? Who's doing that? Is there a CFO?
My mom's our CFO.
Your mom is your CFO.
So we have somebody who collects receivables.
You better be very careful about her.
Oh, trust me. I have to make sure every charge is valid.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So she's your CFO. She goes through all the charges.
She goes through all the charges. She itemizes everything. She's doing all our taxes right now. Bless her heart.
Yeah. You know, in Wolf of Wall Street, the CFO is like Jordan Belfort's father.
Yeah.
And then Jordan Belfort's like, what was this $26,000 you spent last night? And, they're like, oh, we had to take a Pfizer out to dinner, and they ordered all the sides. We went to the steakhouse and they ordered all the sides. And, you know, Jonah Hill's like, yeah, we got all these sides. And the father's like, $26,000 in sides. This is a strip club. And I know it's a strip club.
Yeah.
Is your mom how deep does she get into the
she'll call me. She'll be like, why did you spend $6 at the deli?
Wow.
I'm like, that was just a bottle of Essentia. Why do you need Essentia? That's $6. She's pretty strict.
Great. Yeah.
But we both get alerts for pretty much every charge that happens.
Wow. Okay.
So
what do you do with the cash that's at the company? Because that's the one other thing is like, I spend a bunch of time. I was thinking about this while you're talking. I also want to go back to Facebook ads being a shit show. I was like, I spend a bunch of time doing cash management, which is like, this bond has matured. You know, where does this money go? Like this week, I had a loan out to and it was for $350,000 that I got back, I don't know, yesterday. So I had to like make sure that the wire was the right amount. And then I'm like, okay, I'm now sitting on $350,000 in cash. What the hell am I supposed to do with this? Like, does this go into bond? Does this go in Facebook stuff? Like, I'm sort of making those decisions.
Yeah.
With absolutely no in a non-intelligent way.
And that's still better than a wealth planner.
That's far better than a wealth manager. That's far better than a wealth manager. You know, how do you manage that kind of stuff?
I mean, the credit goes to you, but we just put it in treasuries.
Okay.
So it just sits and I call it farming. It goes out and just farms.
Yeah, 5%. That's right. But like then, where does it go? Does it go in 3 month, 6 month, 9 month, 2 year, 10 year treasuries? Treasuries have
whatever the default is in the banking app.
Okay, let's go over whatever the default is.
Yeah, at some point we got to go through all this.
Because the default can be so like, you know, a year ago or like 3 months ago, the 10 year treasuries were yielding 5%, more than 5%. Now, then they were yielding 3.9%. Now it's 4.3%. So you want to like make sure that there's still a little bit of a game to be played in terms of duration.
Yeah.
So we'll go over that offline.
Cool.
Facebook ads have been a shit show for the last 2 weeks for you guys.
Oh my God. What a shit show. There was the bug and a couple accounts were completely unaffected, but a handful of them totally were affected and they were affected in different ways. Some would have issues with the payment just wouldn't be accepted. Like the credit card wouldn't charge. And it kept showing like an internal platform error. Then another one would be for, you know, hours in the day, no spend for no reason, no message, you know, nothing there. For others, it was like CPM was completely inflated. In that situation, for example, my best use would be to go find who is the most senior person that can help us quickly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most people can't really do much there.
And so did you see mostly like administrative issues? Like, yeah, I can't sign in. Or did you see mostly serious issues of like spend is fucked?
Yeah, it was more like serious issues on the Facebook side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And like that's still continuing. It's not an administrative issue. There's like an issue where people are like, what's going on? My performance is really crappy.
Yeah, it's getting better, I think. Like it's slowly getting better, but it's still not fully fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I found is that I forgot who tweeted this. Somebody tweeted a while ago. They're like, I got a call off of my Facebook. I got off of a call with my Facebook rep and it was a complete waste of time. Mm. And
those are those meta marketing people that email you.
Yeah. Like they sit in Austin, they're SMB guys. And, you know, I found that like I found both with Pinterest and with Facebook in my career, I've had terrible reps and great reps.
Yeah.
And you really have to terrible reps are really hard because there's probably no value you can extract from them. I remember I had a call once and the guy was like, I was running native and the guy was like, how do you guys make money at this company? And I was like, how do you generate revenue? Yes. And I said, sir, I'm now dumber because of you. And then I remember he was like reading this list and he's like, okay, I'm not going to ask this question. And I was like, you don't need to say out loud that you're not going to read a question off of a list. But anyway, so I do think there are reps that are particularly difficult to work with because they just don't know the ecosystem or like what's going on in the world. Then there are reps that are exceptional that everyone wants. And there are reps in the middle somewhere too. Yeah. But even if the reps in the middle somewhere, I feel like there's so much value to be extracted, like so much value they can have. What are promotions that are coming up? Are you hearing from your other brands that they are seeing higher CPMs, or is that really not a, like, you know, people are feeling higher CPMs. They're probably going to tell their Facebook ad rep, you know, I'm feeling higher CPMs. Is that true? Yeah. Is conversion rate going down? What are the things that your management is continuing to harp on? Mm-hmm. So, because that's what they're, like, you know, subsidizing.
Yeah.
You know, what does my saturation look like? Can you run look on your end and look at what my audience saturation looks like? Like, I think that a lot of times with Facebook, people are like, oh, my rep is really garbage. And yep. like most reps are not garbage.
Yep.
There are 1% of people that like just graduated college that don't know what e-commerce is, barely know what Facebook is, and somehow got a job there. And like, they're not well-trained and like, you're not going to get a lot of value from them. There are exceptional reps where they will provide the value upfront on their own. And there are reps in the middle where it's your job to come in prepared and to be like, you know, I'm seeing these issues with Facebook. Other companies that are spending, you know, you're managing 10 accounts. Are people spending more? Are their budgets growing from last year or last quarter or last month? Or are they going down? You don't need to name names, but tell me how other people are trending, because that's probably a good indication of how I should be trending too.
Yeah, definitely growing. And the ones that are growing too are the ones that, like, our brands that do the best on Facebook are brands that really put an emphasis on content and yeah. creative. Like, they care less about the whole funnel. They care more about, okay, do we have the best piece of content? Like, is this content that's going to make people, you know, is it bright and colorful and flashy and interesting? But yeah, I would say Facebook spend is still up. One thing on your reps point, though, I completely agree. Like, you know, most of the reps that reach out, if they cold reach out to you, that's not a real Facebook rep. That's contracted from an outside company. And they're generally looking for to just get on the phone with you and see how they can get you to spend a little bit more. Then there's the reps that are generally based in either Mountain View or Austin. And those are like the SMB reps.
Yeah.
Those guys are hugely helpful because yeah. even though they're not, you know, they can't move mountains maybe, but like everything you were mentioning, the saturation reports, CPMs, platform issues, like those are things that you could extract from them. And I also just think a lot of people don't really put effort into building a relationship with a Facebook rep. They only hit them up when they need help.
Definitely.
Which yeah. doesn't help them when they yeah. need help. And then the best reps are obviously the disruptor teams in Mountain View and New York. Those guys can make anything happen and they can move the quickest.
Yeah. 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 What is the value that the disruptor team offers? Like, I've never had a disruptor rep.
Yeah.
What is the value that they get?
You get access to alphas and betas before anybody else. You get access to be a part of case studies, which means that, you know, let's say, I don't know that this is true, but like Nostra, for example, has a bunch of Facebook case studies. I know Google does this, so I'll say this for Google, but like, let's say Google, you know, Google comes to Sharma Brands, says, hey, Sharma Brands, we want to buy 50 landing pages. If you're in that disruptors group at Google, which they call it something different, you'll get the landing page for free and Google will pay for it and then Sharma Brands will make it. And so you get little advantages wow. here and there where you can save anywhere from, I don't know, $5,000 to $100,000, maybe a quarter in opportunities. And then you obviously get just tier one support. You know, the disruptor reps too, like the average SMB rep has anywhere from, I don't know the number, but it's a lot of clients.
Yeah. yeah
it's yeah. more than 25, I think, per person. Whereas the disruptors reps, I think, is less than 10, maybe less than 5.
Wow.
So you just get a lot more dedicated support. They're proactively looking at what you can yeah. be doing better. And I think they're also compensated based on quarter over quarter spend growth. So they're really looking to figure out how you can grow your account and grow your brand.
It's interesting that like reps can have 25 different accounts, like, you know, SMBs, yeah. and like they can vary so much. I recently had a conversation with a rep and I was like, what is your, like, you know, what are you managing? And they're like, we have one guy who spends $1.5 million a month and one guy who spends, you know, $80,000 a month.
Yeah.
And I'm like the same person.
It's tough because like even yeah. the strategies there are two completely yes, different exactly, worlds of strategy. Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's why I think that's a really hard job. That can be a really hard job.
Yeah.
Nick, Postscript is sponsoring this podcast, and I'm so excited about that. I'm an early investor in Postscript. In fact, I think I was one of the first checks that they received when they graduated Y Combinator. When they sponsored the podcast, they told us to talk about their cashback product, which is amazing. I know I've talked to Ben at True Classic Tees. He really loves their cashback product. You know, but I don't really give a shit about that. I want to talk about what I want to talk about, which is they're so good at SMS.
you know, PostScript is what Native uses for SMS. We signed up really early on with them at Native and really loved it. Unlike Attentive and Klaviyo, PostScript really focuses on SMS. They don't do email. They don't do anything else. So they're best in class at that. They created this amazing on-site opt-in for text messages. So you don't have to go to another page when you're signing up for text messages if you're using PostScript. I remember when they launched it, they had this amazing launch party. I talked to Cody about it, Cody at Jones Road Beauty. He said that when they launched it, it increased their signups for mobile signups by 82%. They saw 3x the revenue beyond their initial forecasts. It's really fantastic product. I really love that PostScript focuses exclusively on SMS and not on email and all this other stuff. If you're thinking about adding SMS or switching SMS providers, you should think about PostScript. Go to postscript.io/limited supply to learn more.
Next question is from Zoe. If there was one failure that taught you the most, what would it be and what advice would you give to others in order to not repeat it?
So the original one I was thinking was trusting AI a little bit too much because, you know, AI is AI. It's not real human. But I was specifically thinking of this heat map, AI heat map tool called Cluify that we used for a little bit. And then I actually dug into the report and I was like, this makes no sense. But then you have to remember, of course it doesn't make sense because it's a computer trying to act like a human on a website that hasn't been run with real traffic.
Yeah.
That was mine. You probably have
that's
a better
one. That's your biggest failure? If there's one failure that taught you the most, that's it? Cluify?
Not marrying an Indian yet.
the first business I ever tried to start was this social location mobile app where we'd go out and try and tell you where to go to have fun. And it was a terrible idea, but it was like a sexy idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I hung out with some investor and pitched him the idea. And he's like, how honest do you want me to be? And I was like, brutal. And he was, and he's like, this is a terrible idea. You're never going to make this work. You're never going to get distribution. You have no idea how hard this is. There's zero chance it works. You know, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great advice, actually, which was don't try and build anything sexy. Everyone wants to build a sexy business because everyone wants to be a playboy. Mm-hmm. The reality is they never work out.
That's so true.
You know, it, Uber might be the one exception that I can think of. Everything else, is less.
And sexy. Uber wasn't sexy at all for a long time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a lesson that I've learned. The other lesson I've learned that's super personal to me, and I'm not sure if it's applicable to anybody else, is in order to do anything, I need to keep balls in the air. I can't start a business by thinking about it and writing on a sheet of paper and then brainstorming more. I need to start a business right away. And as it's failing, my mind will already be working on the next. Business failed and we ended up trying to start another sexy business, which was a big mistake. Again, I repeated it, which was a liquor business where we sold hard liquor online.
But that wasn't a failure, though.
That wasn't a failure, but it was there were so many problems with that business.
Yeah.
I look back on myself and I'm like, what was I thinking with all these problems? But what was helpful was that failure, one failure led to, I guess, this next success.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with Native. Before Native, I wrote this Twitter thread on it once where I was trying to start Kayak for home loans. If you want to get a home loan, it is one day you might go through the process. It is so painful. Especially for you, because you're an entrepreneur. So they're going to send us your W-2 and you might not have a W-2 because you're an entrepreneur. And they're going to say, send us a reference letter. And you're going to be like, what? And they're going to say, send us your bank account. And, my bank account went from $0 to a few million dollars as a result of my sale of Caskers. And then it went to, then there was no income ever again. I didn't have a job. And they're like, what's going on over here? And so, I was like, let me automate all of this. You guys, what should happen is you should just sync into my Bank of America account, mm-hmm. pull everything you need. And it should be a very easy thing to do. And when interest rates go down, you should automatically give me the new rate. Let's say I'm locked into 7.5% rate. Rates dropped to 7% earlier. Does it make sense to refi and just give me the 7% rate? You have access to everything. So I don't need to redo it.
Yeah.
But it was so fucking hard to build that business.
Yeah.
Starting it made me post Caskers. It made me just move.
Right.
And that motion created energy. And that energy ultimately was this home loan business doesn't work, but maybe I should start this deodorant business.
Yeah.
And so for me, the greatest lesson that I've learned in my career is that I need motion to make things happen.
I think it's the best way to learn too. People talk about Facebook ads courses. There's one or two that are great, but for the most part, you just got to get in there with $1,000 and start figuring out what button does what.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. You're not going to go through a course and be like, this is the difference between a headline and the text. And like, you know, you've got to spend dollars.
Yeah,
it's like riding a bike. Yeah. You're not going to be able to do it until you get on.
Exactly.
And yeah, I agree with you on that Facebook ad stuff. You just got to do it.
Totally.
Okay, let's move on to this next question by Shri Reddy. I'm going to skip one. This is, as a new direct-to-consumer brand, when should you start optimizing for profit versus product market fit? Is there a per-unit margin you want to aim for to start?
I'm curious what you think, both as an investor and somebody who owns a handful of brands.
Yeah. So all of my brands, they're not revolutionizing a category. You know, even Native, like, it might have revolutionized deodorant that it was natural, but no one was like, why would anyone need deodorant, right? Like, everyone knew that they needed it. So generally, my brands have that type of product market fit. They don't always have product marketing fit, which is another behemoth in and of itself, which is how do you make sure that you're marketing in a way that makes sense and you can acquire customers for a reasonable amount? The way I did it at Native, I remember this, was like we were paying $5.50 for a stick of deodorant. And the math barely made sense. Like, you know, we had no money to spend on marketing. But that was okay because I was like, look, if this business works, the economies of scale will start working. And I will obviously not be paying this enormous price for a stick of deodorant at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for probably a lot of categories. Like if you're Jolie Showerheads or Athletic Greens or a gummy vitamin business or Symbiotica, the unit cost for your first whatever it was, or Magic Spoon, you know, I bet they have a cheaper price per box of cereal wholesale now. Or like, you know, their own cost has gone down, I bet, by more than 50% since they launched. You know?
Totally.
Because like, before they're like, look, we will make 10,000 because we have to, but if we can do 5,000, let's do that. Now they're like, we need 150,000 of these buddies, baby.
Right.
Like, you know, crank it out.
Yeah.
And so I assume that those economies of scale will hit. And when you're trying to think about margin, just assume that at some point in the next 6 months, you will get to the economies of scale that are good. You won't get to P&G level, but you'll get to, or you won't get to probably Kellogg level, but you'll get to Magic Spoon level. And so like, see if that margin will work 6 months. Presume that your margin 6 months from now is your margin today. Will the economics work when you're marketing? That's how I think about it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it. I do think profit, obviously, is like, you know, that's why you start a business.
Yeah.
But I also do think that you got to leave yourself some room to really test and figure things out before you decide, you know, you're just going to optimize for profit.
Yeah, yeah. You can't do that on day two of running a brand, or even month two of running a brand. There's still
totally
so many things you want to experiment.
How much do you think somebody should, you know, if somebody's starting a new business today, how much should they set aside in order to find that product market fit or product marketing fit?
I'll tell you how I would think about it if I were in somebody else's shoes is like, you know, again, if I were Jeff Bezos' son, I always give this example. I'd be like, great, I have $40 trillion. How about I spend $50 million to figure this out. And I think brands have done that. Didn't like Lunia, or like there was some like clothing brand that was, you know, there have been a bunch of brands that, like, I think it was Lunia, wasn't it, that went bankrupt?
Yep.
And they went bankrupt and it turned out they raised $20 million. And you're like, where did you get $20 million? And it's like, my family.
Right.
And so, you know, then I would probably spend a lot more if $20 million didn't have a lot of value to me. It has enormous amounts of value to me.
Yeah.
So I think I would be like, look, I can spend $5,000. I agree that I'm going to lose $5,000 no matter what when I'm starting this business. If my CAC starts at $100 and I can get it down to, I don't know, $75, I'm going to unlock another $5,000.
Mm.
If I can get the, you know, $100 down to $50, I'll unlock another $10,000.
Yep.
That's how I think about it. Like if it's $100 and I've spent $5,000 and I haven't moved it at all, I haven't learned a single thing, you know, I might still unlock that other $5,000, but I might be like, look, this isn't working.
Right.
Because like, I'm not going to spend $10,000 of my income having spent, you know, when I was making $80,000 a year, you know, which means $50,000 a year post-tax. I just spent 20% of my year, you know, on this these Facebook ads and they didn't go anywhere. Like, I might have learned something, but I wasn't able to reduce my CAC, and that's tough.
Totally.
And so I think that's the thing where I'm like, okay, am I seeing things going in the right direction? That unlocks me spending more money.
Yeah.
Am I not seeing things, you know, going in the right direction? That closes off. And that goes later on too, like with you know, when you're big and you're starting to spend on television ads, and you're like, okay, great. I'll spend $50,000 or $100,000 for a test. You know, if nothing is getting better, if I went from $100 to $123, see you later, television.
Yep.
Like, you know, but if it went from $100 to $50, great. I'm ready to spend another $250,000.
Yeah, I love that answer.
Okay, should we do one more then?
Let's do it.
Okay, great. Let's see. What's another good one? Ooh, okay, let's do this one. Is there a better way to find suppliers and materials for product development? For example, a list or a resource that is specific to the industry or good. If deodorant, go to X. For apparel, go to Y. Sarang Patel.
I feel like the best, and I should also preface by saying that, you know, I'm not usually on this side. I'm mostly on the agency side. But from my limited experience, it's always been introductions from other people who've either done it before or been familiar. Like, you introduced me to Mary Berry. You know, I have another friend who ended up starting to do packaging work, so we use him for packaging work. But yeah, I've always found that, like, warm intros from people who, you know, have had good experiences, and this goes even for 3PLs, for agencies, I think in general. I think if you, you know, the alternative way I think that this person is thinking about is like Import Yeti type of search engine, yeah, or Alibaba, which, you know, you can definitely do and go find great samples and products. But I think it's always better to get a warm intro, or like somebody else that I'll always hit up if I need something sourcing wise is Jeremy Kai, who owns Italic, because he knows every factory in China and what they can do. And
oh, that's interesting.
He's made almost every product under the sun.
Wow.
Yeah.
I agree with that answer, which is intros are the right way to do this for a couple reasons. One is you're going to trust this person more because somebody you know referred them, and they're going to work harder for you because they understand that their reputation is at stake, not just with you, but with the person that made the introduction. And like, I've made introductions to Mary, for instance, and those went sight. Like, you know, ultimately the relationship didn't work out. And like, I feel bad for having made that introduction because I'm like, you know, I put my neck on the line.
Yeah, you put your reputation on the line.
Yeah, and so when you don't, when you're not like a good actor, that's going to be the last intro I'll ever make to you.
Totally.
So yeah, I think that, like, you know, there's reputation on both sides of it for the person who's made the introduction. And so I think those are super valuable. There's no good, you know, Import Yeti is a great one for like, who's importing what from China and like, what are they importing? And what quantities are they even importing in some ways as well?
Yeah.
And I think that is a really good one. And, you know, with Chinese suppliers, it's the hardest because you're sort of sending out a wire to China, to a bank that you'll never hear, you've never heard of, and you'll never hear of again. And, you know, you don't even believe, like, you know, the name of the bank does not fit in the account, like exceeds the account, the characters that you can write in account title.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's a weird name and, or like a different name, I should say. And so I think, yeah, warm intros are the only way to do this. There are not good resources out there, unfortunately. What I would say is I would always ask for references as well. And then I would try and get my, like, not just those references, but I'd try and get my own references, whether it be through Twitter or friends. Like, if you're working with a new 3PL, you want to find out, hey, who is that 3PL? And what have other experiences been like with that 3PL?
Right.
And if you just get references, those references are always going to be positive. You want negative reference. You want somebody who's churned.
Right.
And the, like, if you find somebody who's churned, you can find out, hey, look, how was this 3PL on my way out?
Yep.
Did they fuck up all my stuff? How was this 3PL when I had a billing issue?
Right.
I've had a lot of 3PL issues in my career. And
really?
Yeah.
I've never had a lot
of 3PL issues. And I'm like, you know, I 3PL issues are a call to war. When someone talks about a 3PL, and particularly the one I'm thinking about now, and they're like, hey, what do you think of them? I'm like, if you are raising an army to fight that 3PL, count me in.
Yeah.
And I don't need a gun. Give me a stick. I will sharpen it and I will go stab people myself over there because I am fucking irate.
Yeah.
People will be like, hey, I think this guy's using a 3PL.
Yeah.
And I will reach out to them on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever it is. And I'll be like, hey, let's get on the phone. I've had a bad experience with this random guy in Colorado. Let's chat.
Yeah.
I've had a bad experience with this random guy in Oklahoma. Let's get on a phone because you should not be using that person.
Yeah.
And this is the opposite of an affiliate fee. You don't earn money by,
defiliate.
Yeah. Defiliate. That's right. Yeah. I don't get a defiliate fee, but I do get satisfaction in making sure that person who's a bad actor in the industry does not get more business.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The problem is there's too many people shilling on the internet.
Pleasure,
so this is the counter to the shilling.
That's right, yeah. There is a lot of shilling on Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay, so are there any other resources? Import Yeti was a great one. Is there anything else you use like that or not really?
Not really. I think Import Yeti, you know, there was one point where I wanted to make the best, most comfortable pillow, and I didn't know where to start. And I basically went to Alibaba and I ordered like 25 samples. And I just paid, each sample was like $75 for the product and shipping. And I thought that was pretty efficient too. Just like going on there, learning about what type of textile factory it is, getting the product sample, and then trying it out.
Yeah, yeah, that's super effective. Yeah, in fact, you know, I would say that about Etsy. Like, we made our deodorant on Etsy.
Yeah.
And we did that by, like, you know, looking at a bunch of other deodorants on Etsy and being like, who has good reviews here?
Yeah.
And that's going to be my private label supplier.
Yeah.
And I've suggested other people who are doing, like, other categories also do that. Like, if you're looking to make a business that's selling 200 units and you want to test it out with 200 units, Etsy is a fantastic place.
Yeah.
They have reviews, so you can find out, like, do people like this product or do they not like it? You know the guy's legitimate because he's been selling it. Like, I think that's a fantastic underutilized resource in this instance.
If I was the one who asked this question, my mindset is probably, what's the silver bullet that's going to do it? And I think the answer is, like you said earlier, just go out, just start emailing factories. Go to Alibaba, make an account, start messaging factories, set up a WeChat account or a WhatsApp on your phone, start messaging these people. Also, like, the best way to, like, learn how to do this is just do it. Like, you'll learn, oh, okay, maybe I should be using PayPal instead of a wire, because if something doesn't happen, PayPal's got my back.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe it is worth paying 3% on top of the bill so I can use my Amex, and that way, if nothing works, I get a refund.
That's exact. Yes, both of those are definitely things that I've done. And, like, you know, if you can, go fly out there. Maybe China's inaccessible, but the guy's in.
Actually, you know who's out there and always has an open invite is Roman from Peak 21.
Yeah.
If he always says, like, anybody can come work at the office and go look at the factories.
Yeah, that's awesome. He's in Hong Kong and not in Shenzhen, which is where you need to be. But, you know, look, you don't need to go to Shenzhen. A lot of this stuff is happening in the United States. Go out to Dallas, Texas, where there's a ton of contract manufacturers making skincare products. And go, like, you know, stick your head in and say, hey, I want to make this.
Totally.
Schedule a meeting. You know what happens when you schedule a meeting and fly out there? They take you seriously because they're like, you're spending time and dollars to have this meeting. You're real.
Yeah.
You know what's not real is some guy from with an email address at Gmail being like, hey, do send, give me this.
Yeah.
And so, like, put in effort and other people will put in effort.
100%. I think that's all the time we've got for today.
All right.
There's a lot of good questions here, though, so maybe we'll get to them next season.
Yeah, but that sounds great. I'd
love season 8's coming soon, and thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the Limited Supply community.
And the Slack channel.
And the Slack channel. If you're not in it, go to limitedsupplypod.com, and we'll see you at the beginning of season 8.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next time to cut through the noise in CPG, retail, and e-commerce.
And if you enjoyed this episode, then why not share it with a friend? And be sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss the next one.